Silly Beagle Productions presents Physics in Action, a podcast which shows physics in our everyday world, reaching beyond the scope of the standard textbook.
Each episode brings you applications and analysis of physics in such diverse settings as sports, movies, video games, and television.
We also take a look into the frontiers of physics exploration.
And don't forget, interviews with exciting personalities on the leading edge of physics, innovation, and application.
So join us for our trip into the fantastic world of physics, and don't forget, you can always check out our website at physicsinaction.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Physics in Action podcast. I'm Ricky.
And I'm AJ, and we've got an amazing episode for you today. Leading off, Max talks about the well-known physicist and television personality Brian Greene's book, An Elegant Universe.
Then Kevin discusses The Edge of Physics, a learning narrative by Anil and Nilanathaswamy.
With that, let's get started by turning over to Max.
Hi, this is Max with Physics in Action. I'm here to talk to you today about a book I read over the summer called Physics in Action, or called An Elegant Universe by Brian Greene. And this book is definitely something worth reading if you have the time. It's about string theory, which is a very interesting topic. It's kind of more complex. You should have a little bit of a background in physics before you try and tackle this book. But it's basically, string theory is something that tries to encompass all aspects of physics in one theory, which is called the theory of everything, or the TOE. And the book starts out explaining the two major physics theories that are prevalent in our world today, which are Einstein's theory of general and special relativity, as well as the theory of quantum mechanics. And the problem with these two theories, as described in the book, is that the theory of relativity encompasses large-scale, like planetary motion, things that have to do with the whole universe or very large objects, whereas quantum mechanics deals with very small things such as molecules, how neutrons, protons, electrons interact with each other, and all on the scale called Planck's constant, which Planck's scale, which is just molecular level things, and describes some kind of weird occurrences that you wouldn't be able to see with the human eye, but they can measure through quantum mechanics. So it starts off, the first few chapters are talking about Einstein's theories of general and special relativity, which first off deals with the dilemma between three or four dimensions. And Einstein came to the conclusion that the universe consists of space-time. Now, space-time is made up of four dimensions, the three dimensions that we know of space, which are front and back, left to right, and in and out, or up and down, which would be like the XYZ plane that we're all familiar with. And that's the world that we move around in and we're all most familiar with. But then he also added in time as another space-time dimension. And his basic principle was that everyone and everything is moving through space-time at the speed of light. And this goes to say that when someone is, and it's all relative, so when I am stationary in space relative to the chair I'm sitting on, I am moving through time at the speed of light. Now, when I start to move relative to my chair, say at half the speed of light, I'm running forward at half the speed of light, which is impossible as a human, impossible to do, but if I was running forward or moving in space at the speed of light, I would be moving through time at half the speed of light. Now, this would change relative to the chair. If I had a clock with myself and a clock with the chair, and they were both making the same cycle in the same amount of quote-unquote time, it would appear that my clock would be moving slower, and I would be aging less. The chair relative to me would be going would appear to me to be moving quicker than I am. And say then to the chair, I would appear to be moving quicker than the chair was. It's kind of a complex concept to grasp, and definitely worth reading, because Green just does a great job. The author just does a great job explaining it. He has a few examples with he has like three or four examples that he often goes back and refers to for new concepts. It's just, he does a great job, so it's really worth reading the book. But this theory, the first problem that he discussed with this theory of relativity was that Newton had a theory of gravity that didn't coincide with Einstein's theory of relativity. And Newton's theory of gravity was that, well, Newton found out how to manipulate gravity, how to measure gravity and use it to make accurate calculations, so accurate that we could land on the moon, calculating the Earth's gravity as well as the moon's gravity. And he just found all the formulas that we needed to know, but was never really concerned with how gravity actually works, what type of interaction, how the force is created. And Einstein, Newton's theory conflicted with Einstein's, because Einstein said that nothing can move faster than the speed of light. And the force of gravity, according to Newton, was instantaneous. So, therefore, our Earth, which is held in orbit around the sun by gravity, if the sun was just suddenly to disappear, it was no longer there, according to Newton, we would feel that shift in gravity immediately, whereas it would take about 8.5 minutes for the light to actually get to us. So we would feel the acceleration due to gravity change quicker than we would see the light. And this conflicted with Einstein, because nothing can move faster than light, therefore gravity cannot as well. So Einstein kind of made a little modification to his relativity, and I believe it's general relativity now, which is space-time is kind of this fabric where when a mass is placed amongst it, it warps the whole space-time around, so it's bending in as if you had a rubber mat or a fabric mat and you placed a ball in the middle of it. It would form a little funnel towards where the ball was placed, which is kind of like how gravity works, where if I placed a bowling ball in the middle of a huge rubber sheet, it would bend the rubber sheet down. So if I rolled a marble around, the marble would slowly come in towards the bowling ball, which is the same effect as gravity has on other objects around it. As the sun would be creating this pocket, so to speak, that the Earth is falling into, but accelerating towards the center. So this theory has kind of been worked out, and Einstein has it good, and general relativity is great for people who are working on these large-scale types of things. But then there was the weird quantum mechanics, which is much harder to understand, but also done a great job in this book. An Elegant Universe does a great job to explain it. It's a little bit harder to grasp the concepts of it, but you can really work through it if you have the time. Quantum mechanics deals with the uncertainty principle, which is for many physicists a very hard thing to get a handle on, and really hard to accept, because it basically states that at very small scales, at the molecular level, there is a chance, for instance, an electron, there is a chance that an electron could be at one point at any given moment, but there's also a chance that it could be at another point. So this is basically saying that nothing has a definite no objects at the molecular level have a definite position. So this doesn't affect us. This doesn't affect our world because we can't measure these very small scales. But it does conflict. Although it doesn't really matter to most people that the two theories are conflicting, the problem is that they do, and the math has been tried to work out as explained in the book. They just do not work well together. You cannot join quantum mechanics with general relativity or special relativity, which is troubling to some physicists, just to know that something we're doing has to be wrong. There has to be some error somewhere, because the universe at the small level is the same universe as it is at the big level. So this is where the book even leaves it up to you to decide, is it worth it to care to find a theory of everything that covers all, and or should we just leave it as is because we can make the accurate measurements we want to? Or so it suggests string theory or super string theory as the way to overcome these differences. And string theory, this is by far the most complex thing. It's kind of pushing it. You can either believe it, you can not believe it. It's basically these small oscillating one-dimensional strings make up all of matter around us. So electrons, neutrons, protons, quarks, everything, all the small, every building block of matter comes down to a string, which is oscillating, which gives it its mass and its electric charge and its magnetism and its gravity and all. So it's really kind of controversial, and it's not a definite theory at all, but it is one that claims to be the first to successfully combine the two generally accepted theories of physics. And it's really hard to get into what superstring theory covers and how it works. It's very complex, and that it's something that you would really have to read this book to really get a hold of. I myself not 100% on the whole superstring theory. It's just really complex material, and it's definitely something worth reading, though, if you do have the time. So I would just recommend read, it's called An Elegant Universe. It's definitely worth reading if you have the time, and I hope what I've told you about it has helped. Thank you.
Thanks, Max. Next on the docket, we have Kevin reviewing The Edge of Physics.
Hello, my name is Kevin, and I'm going to be reviewing The Edge of Physics by Anil Ananthaswamy. This book is really interesting because instead of your average physics textbook, it's actually a narrative in which Anil focuses on physics that he's encountered in his real life in his journey throughout the world. And so this book was basically a recent history of revolutions in the science of physics, and it explores the methods and tools scientists use, as well as the descent they face, to bring about how we know or even don't know our universe today. I'm about to take you through some of the main concepts mentioned in the book. In just the past 20 years, physicists' view of the whole universe has been completely revolutionized. The main method of exploration used for these revolutions was the studying of how our universe was created. And basically, we do that by looking at our celestial bodies outside of the Earth, so looking at astronomy mainly. And back in 1921, Edwin Hubble discovered that the universe's speed of expansion was increasing. And he discovered this when he was in the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. Now, this meant that there was something repulsing the force of gravity that is drawing all matter together simultaneously. And physicists attributed this phenomena to dark matter and dark energy, and they actually calculated to make up approximately 96% of the universe. Now, up until that point, physicists felt that they were able to explain a majority of the universe with the laws that they practiced. But now this meant that they could not explain 96% of the universe that we live in today. And this is really crazy because it just shows how you can plateau in discoveries where you feel like you almost know everything, and then all of a sudden, bam, you got a whole new world opened up to you, and it's really open for exploration right now. Now, not only did physicists have more questions when this discovery of dark energy occurred, but their previous knowledge was proved completely inadequate to understanding our universe. And some physicists responded to this by developing a thing called the anthropic principle that basically stated that our universe is what it is because we are here to say so. Basically saying we're here for a reason, and of all the possible things that could have happened in time, this happened, and basically accepting where we are today just because we actually are here. Now, while this principle does seem like an excuse to some for having no idea on how to tackle the questions that are arising because of dark energy, it's an interesting point that if something happened even just slightly different in the formation of our universe, humanity might not even be around to ask these questions. Now, another huge part of the exploration of physics is the Large Hadron Collider, which focuses particles with forces equal to 2 400-ton trains traveling 150 kilometers per hour into each other, with a 27-kilometer track of sub-zero superconducting magnets. Now, what happens when this collision occurs? Well, we basically get anything from the Higgs boson, which is a particle capable of teaching physicists the difference between a photon and a massive boson, to maybe dark matter, which may come out of the collision. Now, since modern physics now only explains 4% of the universe, a new idea called string theory has arisen to kind of deal with this. String theorists enjoy prophesying that the whole universe will be able to be explained in just a few equations. That would make physics C a lot easier with not having to memorize everything, but it's a very interesting concept, but obviously not proved yet. And another unexplained phenomena in the creation of the universe is how more matter was created than antimatter. And that's interesting because physicists believe that for every unit of matter, there must also be a unit of antimatter. So the fact that there's an imbalance in our universe, a very distinct imbalance, is pretty interesting. So one theory that has come about to try and explain this imbalance is the theory of a multiverse. It states that during the creation of our universe, many universes were created, as many as the magnitude of 10 to the 500. And this could explain any imbalances that we find, and also implies that any other universe could have laws of physics that completely diverge from the ones that we think we know. Now, in The Edge of Physics, the author is very careful to explain all the concepts he mentions in his narrative, so the reader is never confused. And I'm just going to go through his explanations that I think were very comprehensive. And one model that he explains of particle physics is the standard model of particle physics. And it includes four fundamental forces of nature, and these aren't your stereotypical earth, wind, fire, and water, but they're actually electromagnetism, the strong nuclear force, the weak nuclear force, and gravity. And then, as for fundamental particles, they're split into two categories called bosons and fermions. Bosons are particles that carry forces, while fermions are the particles that make up matter. So the bosons include the photon, which carries the electromagnetic force, the W and Z particles, which carry the weak nuclear force, and the eight types of gluons, which are carriers of the strong nuclear force. While photons and gluons are massless, the W and Z particles are some of the most massive particles discovered, about 80 and 91 times the mass of a proton, respectively. Fermions include two subcategories, leptons and quarks. Now, leptons include electrons, the muon, the tau, and all of their respective neutrinos. And quarks include pairs of up and down quarks, charm and strange quarks, and top and bottom quarks. And these quarks come together three at a time to form the most common baryons, such as the proton and the neutron. Now, while the standard model has been tested thoroughly, it is flawed in that it does not include or mention gravity or the gravity boson, which is the graviton. Another topic thoroughly explained by the author is the standard model of cosmology, which is basically how our universe has formed from what we know as the beginning of time. Anil mentions the Big Bang as the common denominator for all of our universe beginning stories, and explains Big Bang as a time when the universe is an extremely hot and dense speck of space-time. And now, only 10 to the negative 34 seconds after the Big Bang, he mentions the Planck epoch, which is where the four forces of nature are unified as one, not even separated yet. And eventually, between the symmetry between gravity and the other three forces is broken. 10 to the negative 36 seconds after the Big Bang is the grand unification epoch. Strong nuclear force separates from the weak nuclear force and triggers inflation, which is also known as the rapid and instant expansion of the universe. Now, one really interesting thing, when I hear the word epoch, I think of millions of years. And this epoch lasts less than 10 to the negative 36 of a second, which is pretty amazing. And so after the inflation occurs, the universe then reheats, giving rise to radiation and fundamental particles, including quarks, electrons, and dark matter. 10 to the negative 12 seconds after the Big Bang is called the end of the electroweak epoch. Electromagnetism and weak nuclear force part ways. And baryogenesis, which was not understood at the time of writing, has given rise to more matter than antimatter. 3 minutes after the Big Bang, nuclei of small elements like hydrogen and helium begin to form. 370,000 years, a huge jump, after the Big Bang is the epoch of recombination, in which the universe has cooled enough to allow electrons to combine with nuclei to form neutral elements. 300 million years after the Big Bang, our first stars and galaxies form. And finally, 3 billion years after the Big Bang, the repulsive force of dark energy begins to overpower gravity, accelerating the expansion of the universe. Overall, I would recommend The Edge of Physics to anyone interested in physics, but maybe not extremely educated in the matter and not a professional in the field. And it not only explains the concepts very in-depth and very layman's terms, but it also shows how they're being researched on the brink of technology today, and therefore connects them with real life, making the book extremely interesting. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. That will wrap up this episode of the Physics in Action podcast. We'd love to hear from you. Write to us at physicsinactionpodcast@gmail.com or leave us feedback on our iTunes webpage. Just search for Physics in Action. And we love positive feedback on our iTunes webpage. Or leave us a comment on our webpage at physicsinaction.com. And thank you for supporting our efforts by starting your Amazon.com shopping for our webpage by clicking on the Amazon.com link on the right.
And a special thanks to Jeff Myers and For Me To See for the intro and exit music tech. Music is brought to you courtesy of Mevio's Music Alley. Check it out at music.mevio.com.